Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Milzoff, senior editor at Billboard and musical theater fan here. So if you're a fan of music of any kind, you're probably well acquainted with the idea of covers. When an artist sings a song they didn't originally write or perform, sometimes exactly in the style of the original artist, sometimes in a totally different way. And in the musical theater world, it's common for performers who do concerts or have a cabaret act to cover pop songs in their acts. But few performers have made it as much a part of their careers or managed to reinvent songs so completely as Kyle Riabko, my guest on the podcast today. Kyle was, until fairly recently, not part of the musical theater world at all. He grew up in Canada and came here originally with a record deal as a singer-songwriter. It wasn't his goal to be on Broadway one day, and it wasn't until later in life that he came to the theater world, taking over the lead roles on Broadway in Spring Awakening and then in Hair. But the show that has been probably the most defining of his career thus far is a really unusual combination of theater and pop. It was called What's It All About? Bacharach Reimagined, and it debuted off-Broadway at New York Theater Workshop in 2013. It was in no way what you might think of as a traditional musical. The show was totally musical. It was entirely songs by the great pop composer Burt Bacharach and his longtime lyricist Hal David. But those songs were played by Kyle, who arranged the music, and an onstage rock band. It's still one of the most truly original moving shows I've seen in recent years, and it went on to the West End in London under a slightly different name, Close to You, Bacharach Reimagined, again. On September 29th and 30th, Kyle is going to be performing his acoustic set of those songs at Joe's Pub here in New York. And he came by to talk about his sort of evolving relationship to Bacharach's music, the show, along with another big project that he has coming out soon, another album reimagining classic songs, but this time those by musical theater giant Richard Rodgers.
'Cause I'm not meant to live alone, turn this house into a home. When I climb the stairs and turn the key, well, please be there. Still in love with me.
So you are someone who started as a singer-songwriter before you came to the musical theater world. Yes. So, and you've worked with a lot of pop people over the years who we're familiar with. So I was curious to hear first just about that part of your life and how it got going, and then how you managed to get to Broadway from there and how that became an interest for you.
Yeah. Well, when I was 14, I started working with a guy in Canada named Chris Burt Gaffney, and we wrote songs together, and the idea was to sort of put a package together of tunes that we could go down to America with and get a record deal. And it was like as simple as that. And in the early 2000s, that track existed.
That was a thing that could happen.
And so I spent a year or so on those songs, and we made a few calls and a few journeys down here, and eventually we landed with a place called Aware Records, which was based out of Chicago and run by a guy named Greg Latterman. And he signed John Mayer and sort of brought him over to Columbia through Aware. And so they were in the John Mayer business, and that's sort of what I was doing. I was a guitar playing sort of kid, and I signed a record deal with them. And that became sort of like about 4 years of my life, making records, touring all over the world, you know, hustling at radio stations and that whole thing. So I feel that I was one of the last people to experience that sort of traditional pop music trajectory. And it was really fun, and it was a great learning experience. But ultimately, as you know, the music industry changed so much. And in that time period, around 2007, someone called me, an agent called and said, have you heard of this thing called Spring Awakening? It's really cool, and it kind of sounds like you. And I'd never been to Broadway. I didn't even know what Broadway was. I'm from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, in Canada.
I've never met someone from Saskatchewan before.
Now you have. It's really exciting to meet us. And I just knew Broadway Avenue in Saskatoon. I was that naive. I thought it was like where you go to get, like, you know, your cheese and coffee. And then I came down here, and I had a friend come to the show with me to just check it out. And my idea of what Broadway sounded like was really sort of set in stone in my mind. I was thinking about sort of, you know, the traditional sound. And when I heard these young people singing the way they were singing and the music arranged the way it was arranged, I realized, oh, there is a world down here where they're playing the type of music that I like, but on stage in front of a captive audience, not in a club where you're trying to win people over. And so, you know, long story short, I ended up in Spring Awakening, and that was the beginning of my sort of theater world. But those are kind of the broad strokes of how it happened.
I was going to say that, I mean, you sort of got from the John Mayer business into the Jonathan Groff business.
A little bit. I mean, the way that I look at it, I still feel like a musician first, and I feel like I'm privileged to sort of dip into musical theater and dip out. That's just the way that I feel. I never felt fully like a musical theater person, but it's embraced me, and so it's been a really great sort of transition in my career. I never would have thought when I was a kid who really just wanted to be sort of a rock star that I'd be talking to you about Broadway musicals. That would not have crossed my mind, but now it is, and it's fun.
And you've been in two of the great sort of rock-leaning Broadway musicals. I was going to say those are maybe not the greatest example of what all of Broadway will be like, but very lucky to do those two in particular.
That's the thing. It was one of those things. It just was the right place, right time, right part, right time. You know? Yeah.
So did doing those shows change how you approached your own work as an artist or how you performed?
Without a doubt. Yeah. I started thinking of songs differently. I started thinking of them as little mini movies that have something to say, as opposed to 4-minute jam sessions. You know, that's what I grew up with, and we were like, oh, we're gonna play a different set every night, and our favorite band is Fish, and we're gonna do 10-minute guitar solos, and that's what was feeding us, were those sort of like jams. And I still love to do that, but what Broadway taught me is that you can actually really construct something that you're in control of, and that there's an art and a craft behind that, and I that started to seep into my sort of thinking about music in general. Yeah.
And I mean, did you start to see parallels between pop songwriting and musical theater songwriting?
I started to see, when I started working with Burt Bacharach, that's when I saw the parallels. Because his songs don't go chorus, verse, chorus, verse, bridge, chorus like most pop songs do. His songs are like, they arc all over the place, and they sort of ebb and flow depending on what he wanted the song to sound like and what he wanted the song to say. And that's what musical theater writers write like. They don't follow like that format that'll feel good on the radio. So there are a lot of parallels there. And it's also, a lot of people are disappointed with the fact that Burt and Hal David only wrote one musical, Promises, Promises. And they feel like they could have, you know, it would be exciting to hear another show from them, because their writing lends itself so well to that.
I agree. Well, you kind of created that show
I
in
suppose.
A way,
yeah.
which we should talk about. How did Bacharach come to you in the first place?
I was invited to, I think he had seen me in Spring Awakening, and I was invited to...
I love that he went to Spring Awakening.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, in Los Angeles. So after I did it here on Broadway, I was on the first national tour, and I guess he was there one night. I did not know. But after that, I was invited to the recording studio to sing for him, to be his singer on some demos of new music he was writing. He was like 83 at the time, and he was still writing new music.
That's crazy.
And so he needed a singer, so they called me. And I just was like a hired gun, and I figured I would just be in and out in an hour, and that would be it. And I'm here, you know, 6 years later, still in the Bacharach world, you know.
So how did doing a session
yeah.
grow into doing a musical completely of his music?
So at that session, we really sort of clicked musically. It was it was the greatest session I've ever been a part of, and it was highly unusual and unexpected in that there was no track and there was no click track or anything like that. It was literally a piano and Bert sitting down playing it. And I was, you know, sitting as far away as you are from me with a microphone, and we were sort of breathing together. And he still likes that organic sort of way of working, mm-hmm. which I do too. And we formed a sort of a musical connection in that session. And I invited my manager and friend David to one of those sessions. It ended up being a couple days, and he was sitting with Bert in the control room, and he said, "God, it's so great hearing Kyle sing your music. Wouldn't it be cool for him to sing all of the old stuff too, and we could come up with a way to reinterpret it?" And so that was, and Bert sort of in his very quiet way sort of said like, "Yeah, that'd be cool," and that started it. That
Good
was enough
impression.
Of a spark. So that was the beginning of it. And then I took that idea and ran with it. I just went, you know, home, my little home studio, and I just started plunking away at these songs and finding new ways to fit them together. And it was the beginning of this piece that you are talking about.
So, and these are the songs that we'll be hearing at your Joe's Pub show, I should say.
Yeah, this Joe's Pub show. So it ended up being a stage show that we did in New York here at New York Theatre Workshop. And then we took it to the West End in London. But now I'm doing a solo acoustic version of it that I sort of tour around and play play venues. And I will be doing that at Joe's Pub September 29th and 30th.
So I think what people will hopefully be struck by, which is what to me was so powerful about the show when I saw it, is that in some way, the way you do these songs gives them this depth that I, and I think a lot of people, didn't consider with Bacharach before. I think that he maybe unfairly gets a reputation as writing these kind of mushy love songs.
Yeah.
And coming away from that show, I was like, these are really sad songs.
Yeah.
I mean, was that something that always jumped out at you about his music, or did it take you time to discover that?
It took a little time. It was just, what I realized is, first of all, most of the lyrics are written by Hal David,
mm-hmm.
who is a genius in his own right. The great thing about our show is it had songs that were written with other lyricists too, but a lot of the lyrics to Bacharach songs are insanely sad and deep and poetic, as you say. And the beauty of what Bacharach did was that his production value was peppy and happy, and it had the horn section and the strings. And so it was almost like this weird juxtaposition between happy music and sad words. And I just thought, what would it be like if we sort of mellowed out the arrangement and made it sound more like what we're used to hearing now, guitar, bass, drums, key, you know, and simplify that. And what I didn't know this was what would happen, but what ended up happening is that the anguish in those lyrics came out because of that new arrangement. So it was sort of still playing the same song, same melody, same everything, but just adjusting the arrangement a little bit, and it gave it a different color, I guess, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it feels like it ultimately becomes the show kind of about loneliness.
in a lot of ways, yeah. Mm. Well, you know, Bert's favorite song that
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
He wrote is Alfie. Mm-hmm. And as you get to know him as a person, and you listen to the song, and you sing that song hundreds of times, you start to recognize why, you know. He's a guy that, even at his age, still asks questions about life and looks back and thinks, oh, wow, you know, what's it all about?
Did you expect that this was going to become such a big part of your own career as it has? Because this, I mean, you're almost having the experience now of someone who does a Broadway show for years and has to find new ways to do it every night, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, when we first started out, I didn't expect it at all. I thought it was sort of, again, each step of the way was sort of, I figured I'd do a few shows and then that would be it. But it just organically built. It's like every once in a while in your career, something happens where it, like, something just feels right and you know you have to keep going down that avenue. And that's what happened with the Burt Show. People seemed to like the sound. And so, yeah, it went from that 1 hour recording session to like a 6 year lifestyle of Bacharach, you know.
And are you and Burt still in touch?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And also I still enjoy playing these songs. I actually do, you know. So it's been a totally unexpected life experience, you know, and it continues to this day.
I was curious about the songs themselves. Are there songs that you didn't relate to as much in the beginning of the show that now when you do your acoustic set are really meaningful to you? Or
that's a good question. I think, you know, Always Something There to Remind Me, for some reason that feels like the most, I have a very guttural reaction to that when I play it acoustically live. And that's a song that, again, like I grew up listening to the 80s version. What was the band that covered it again?
Naked Eyes.
The Naked Eyes version, which is always, and I never would have thought that one day I'd be playing it in sort of a slower, like, again, with more anguish. And that song is one that I have found more depth over the years with. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, there's just so many. It's every night you connect with. What I really like doing is seeing the eyes of the audience as I go through the set list, because there's this like glow in their eyes as they realize, oh, he wrote that song and that song and that song.
That's definitely one of them. I remember being in a theater, people being like, oh, he wrote that?
Who knew? Yeah. So there's a real, that's a real factor. And it's similar with Richard Rodgers. You know, I have a, you know, friends who have nothing to do with the theater community who are just, you know, musicians, and they would never think of, you know, oh, What a Beautiful Morning, and, you know, Where or When, and My Favorite Things. They know the tunes, but they don't know they're all written by this one guy.
Mm-hmm.
And when they see the list, you know, this has been happening to me over the last few days, they're just like, oh, wow, you wrote that and that and that. So there's like this, it's like, educational is the wrong word, but it's fun to show people the genius of these creators, you know, and really prove to them why they are geniuses. You know?
Well, it strikes me as similar to when you have a really great pop song that can be covered over the years in 8 million different ways. When the bones of the song are just really great, it lends itself to reinterpretation.
That's what I've been saying. I've been saying the word indestructible. Like if a song is built extremely well and the foundation is there, then you can take a blowtorch to it and you can do anything to the song. You can play it with a saw and it still works. That's when you have a great song, you mm-hmm. know. And Bacharach has that, and Richard Rodgers has that, and there are very few other people you can say that about, you know.
Was it the reimagining Bacharach experience that led you to the idea of reimagining Rodgers?
It was, and literally so, because there's was a day that I was at Bert's house, and in the hallway leading to his music room, there was a framed letter on the wall, and it looked very important. It looked like something he put there for you to see that he was proud of. And so I took a closer look, and it was a fan letter from Richard Rodgers to Bert. And, you know, the essence of the letter is just, I really love what you're doing. This is in the 70s. I think you're amazing. I consider you the new hope, you know, for music going forward. So yeah. Richard Rodgers felt really deeply about Bert's musicality. And then I found out that Bert felt the same way even before that letter. And there are articles in the press where you can see Bert sort of praising Richard Rodgers and loving him. And so that was just sort of too good to pass up. I figured that would be the perfect and obvious next composer to sort of dig into.
Well, I mean, especially for someone like you who didn't come from a traditional musical theater background, it's interesting for you to go to Rodgers.
Exactly. Yeah, well, because it's through Bert, I don't think of it as, my first thought isn't musical theater when I think of Richard Rodgers, even mm-hmm. though that is most people's. So they're just songs to me, you know, and that's how, part of the thing is, like, with this new album, Richard Rodgers Reimagined, I don't profess to be a Richard Rodgers expert at all. I just really like these songs and thought it would be cool to sort of see, again, what they sound like in a new way.
Well, and I think that if I were to draw any line between him and Bert, he's another person who, you know, you look at his shows and they sound, you immediately think, oh, these are like great, you know, almost warhorse Broadway shows at this point. But I mean, listening to his lyrics now, he was quite revolutionary in the way that he wrote, especially for his time.
Yeah. And I mean, so he wrote with Lorenz Hart was his first lyricist, and then Oscar Hammerstein later. And on this album, there are songs that both of them wrote. Mm-hmm. Often you just get a Rodgers and Hart album or a Rodgers and Hammerstein, and this album has both. There's a stark difference between the songs he wrote with Lorenz Hart and the songs he wrote with Oscar Hammerstein, which was fascinating to sort of look at and dive into. Plus, I read a biography about him that was just sort of mind-blowing, and I felt, okay, this is a genius. You know, there are not many people you can say that about, but you can about Richard Rodgers, and you can about Burt Bacharach.
What I would love to hear more about that. What do you see as the big difference between the Hart and Hammerstein collaborations?
It seems to me like, and again, this is not...
Just your
there
opinion.
Are people who know this way deeper than I do, in a deeper way than I do. But my feeling is that the songs he wrote with Lorenz Hart have an element of tongue-in-cheek. They're a little bit tongue-in-cheek. They are a little riskier, and they feel like a younger man wrote them.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who's finding his voice, which is really exciting to hear. And then the Oscar Hammerstein songs are incredibly earnest, which I love. I love earnestness, and I think that's missing from music today.
Mm-hmm.
But these are songs that someone who has a family wrote, you know, and they're not afraid to go back to the root note of the song again, just to like land. Whereas the Lorenz Hart songs are a little bit more Bacharachian in that you don't know where they're gonna go. So that's like a really, you know, that's one take on it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a definite difference, without a doubt, you know. And I know as a writer, when you're around different people, different parts of you come out, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, I hear a lot of different influences in your takes on these songs. And one, I know that you worked with Jason Mraz a bit earlier in your career, and I hear a lot of him and your voice and your approach. So I was curious to hear, you know, if he's an influence on you at all on this album.
Well, he was. I toured with him for a long time back in those Aware Columbia Records days, and he became a really good friend. And you know, I was around him a lot and watching his shows a lot. So I think it just one of those things that naturally seeps into your musicianship, you know. But yeah, I really like Jason Mraz a lot. Yeah,
and I think he just worked with Sarah Bareilles on her Waitress.
Album? Did he work? Oh yeah, he was on the album or something. Yeah. No, that's great.
He must have a little love of theater too.
He does, and I think I knew that he did. And his songs also are sort of like they're not afraid to be storytelling songs.
Completely. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't necessarily all. He's a little theatrical, actually. Mm-hmm. He always has been, you know. Yeah.
Did you see a connecting thread in the style that you sort of apply to these songs, or was it really different for each song?
It was a song-by-song basis, so I would look at the song and try to find an element about it that I could magnify that you wouldn't necessarily have done before. So, for example, my favorite things, you know, you think of Julie Andrews singing it and it's Raindrops on Roses and da-da-da and all that stuff. But the line that I really focused on is, then I won't feel so bad. That I found interesting. Mm-hmm. And so this version of it, when you listen to it, you'll see it's really focused on that line and bringing I'm overusing this word today, but bringing the anguish out of the song from that. It seems like a very happy song, but that's an interesting line, and then I won't feel so bad. So you were feeling bad. So the song sort of said, so it was things like that. And then, you know, like I Have Dreamed, that, you know, Stevie Wonder came to mind. And so I thought, what would it sound like if Stevie Wonder played this song? And that's how it turned out.
Well, I'm feeling very brilliant right now because I was going to say I Have Dreamed, I think, is my favorite on the album, and I completely got Stevie vibes.
Oh, good. That's
totally
great. That's good news. Yeah.
And that's a song that I think of as, like, my first thought is just that it's very unabashedly romantic in context in The King and I, but there is this really gritty kind of soul feel that you bring to it.
Thanks, yeah. And then, you know, there's a song like Some Enchanted Evening, which you know, is incredibly romantic and usually sort of in a larger than life operatic way, almost, you know, romance, romance, romance. Mm-hmm. And I thought of doing it still romantic, but what if it was more of a playful romance as opposed to this big, broad, you know, musical theater romance? I listen to the song and then think of almost like opposites, like what's the opposite of what you would normally think this song should sound like.
Mm-hmm. Has doing this album made you think about other shows you might want to do that perhaps you wouldn't have thought of before?
I mean, we have some ideas and we're working on something. It's too early to talk about, you know, but I don't know. I'm just going to probably hang out with this music for a while and do concerts with it and see where it leads, you know.
I wondered if there were, like, pie-in-the-sky roles, dream roles that you would love to do.
People ask me that. I'm, like, the worst person to ask that question to because, like I said, I didn't grow up in musical theater. So, you know, I end up just saying, like, Curly. You know, how about Curly? You know?
Why not?
Yeah.
Well, your Oh, What a Beautiful Morning is really nice. So
thanks.
It could happen.
Yeah, you never know.
Well, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, yeah,
great to chat.
Thanks for having me, yeah. In those dreams, I love you so.
Kyle Riabko's album Richard Rodgers Reimagined will be out on Ghostlight Records October 27th, though you can hear the first single now, Oh What a Beautiful Morning from Oklahoma, on Spotify. The original London cast album of Close to You, Bacharach Reimagined, is also on Ghostlight, by the way, which I would highly recommend listening to. Kyle is going to be playing those songs from the show at Joe's Pub in New York September 29th and 30th. He'll come back to Joe's Pub November 2nd through 4th in support of Richard Rodgers Reimagined, and he'll also play music from that album at The Wallace in Los Angeles November 10th and 11th. If you're a fan of Billboard on Broadway, please subscribe to me on iTunes. Give us lots of nice stars and reviews, and we'll be back next week with another episode.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.